Hi, I'm Joe Feeks, editor of Pig Health Today, and with me is Chris Rademacher. He is a swine extension veterinarian at Iowa State University. Chris, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
You've been talking a lot about veterinary feed directives this year, last year. There's a lot of prep time leading up to it. Now that we're about 6 months into the new veterinary feed directive rules, what are you seeing in the field? How's it going?
You know, overall, from the standpoint of implementing into swine, I think the whole thing has gone very, very smoothly. You know, there were two or three drugs that were commonly used in swine production probably since about the mid-90s that required a VFD. So many veterinarians were already familiar with the process. So a lot of our education efforts were really to make sure people understood which drugs now needed to be a VFD. And then they made some changes to make the VFDs a little bit easier to write. As far as I've heard, at least from many of my colleagues, other than just some additional paperwork, maybe some additional visits with their producers, it's gone really pretty smoothly.
Still, change always creates some anxiety. What have been some of the higher hurdles that you've seen in the field?
A lot of questions, specifically about, well, I maybe get my feed from two different mills. Do I need different VFDs? Or can I use the same drug twice in the same group of animals, even though there's no refill on the label? So really a lot of the effort has just been around making sure people understood about those changes and what VFDs they would have to write for the different uses that they would have. You know, one of the nice things about the whole VFD process is because it was a governmental regulation, it forced more producers to have their interactions with their veterinarians. In the past, you know, producers could just go in and get many of these antibiotics off the shelf from their local feed store without a veterinarian involved. So what this really did is made sure that the producers had an established veterinary client-patient relationship with a veterinarian, and what that allows for is discussion between the veterinarian and the producer about, do we still need this antibiotic or that antibiotic, you know, after an assessment of their farm and their facilities, and maybe things such as, well, what if we change things in biosecurity, or maybe we can do some extra vaccinations to help make sure that we're using antibiotics more judiciously. So I think it's created that conversation between them. There's always a lot of angst, I think. The FDA has been very clear for at least probably the first year to say they're going to be very educational. As long as you're trying to do everything right, if you do get an inspection, they're going to work on educational before enforcement.
And I know one of the challenges with the Veterinary Feed Directive is that a lot of these feed medications, while they are still highly effective, they were licensed, in many cases, decades ago. And so that's when they got their labels, that's when they got the approved indications. So you might have a product that you know is effective against respiratory disease, but it says atrophic rhinitis on the label, which you don't see a lot of anymore. How do you square these older labels with today's health problems?
That's probably been one of the more difficult pieces. The swine industry, I mean, any feed indication, you can't go off-label. Veterinarians can write off-label for water medications and for injectable antibiotics, but they can't really change the feed label. So that's been somewhat of a challenge. Generally, what they've done is they've gone through, reviewed the history with the farm, done some diagnostics, and as long as they felt like, hey, we know we're seeing this, there's an indication on the label for this, and I've got some diagnostic evidence to back that up, most people have been able to circumvent those sorts of issues. If not, they probably looked at things as, well, maybe we can't use it in the feed, so maybe we will do something like we'll do more injections. We might do mass medication with a needle rather than in the feed, or we may use something in the water. Now, certainly there's been some regulations with the water too. I mean, the FDA's concern was about the use of medically important antibiotics in both the feed and the water in mass medication protocols. So they just have to go through a prescription process, which once again, allows the producer and the veterinarians to have a discussion about, well, here's what we're seeing, what's our options, what do we think the best option is to give us the best efficacy and also to protect the use of antibiotics for the future generations.
I think we have to make it clear, though, that not all antibiotics fall under this VFD, is that correct?
That's correct. There's four or five commonly used antibiotics that are not deemed to be medically important for human use. Now, that's really the distinction. Those antibiotics are Tiamulin, probably otherwise better known as Denagard, Carbadox, probably more commonly known as Mecadox, any of the ionophores, which in swine we have a growth promoter called Skysis, bacitracin, so bacitracin zinc or BMD. All those antibiotics do not require a VFD in order to feed them. So what we've seen in many cases for producers that and veterinarians that felt like they still were getting efficacy from a level of growth promotion for certain antibiotics, they just migrated over to those classes, knowing that they didn't need to prescribe a VFD and knowing that there's really no tangible threat to human health from an antibiotic resistance standpoint by utilizing those drugs.
Now, you just use the expression growth promotion, and of course a lot of people do. When you look at the labels of these products, they say increase feed conversion, increase rate of growth. Do antibiotics really increase the growth of the pig, or do they just create a healthier gut so that the animal can absorb feed more efficiently?
Yeah. It's a little bit of the chicken or the egg question in the truest sense, but generally the hypothesis is low level of infections, well, maybe not enough to create a clinical problem in the animal, certainly does either retard their gain or makes their feed efficiency not near as efficient as what it can be. So certainly that's, for those indications, that was one of the big ones, right, as they pulled the growth promotions away for all the medically important antibiotic, but we still had about four or five options to use for non-medically important antibiotics for those producers that still felt like they wanted to get some of those growth promoting properties of those antibiotics.
What does a industry report card look like? How do we determine if this is working?
Really, we don't have a good unified antibiotic metric that all producers use today. That certainly has been an ask from the government, and even within all the livestock species, bovine, dairy, you know, beef, dairy, poultry, it's how do we really count that? You know, feed, that's fairly easy to calculate. Water probably can be recorded. Injectables, that's a little bit tougher because those tend to be given routine daily. So today there's really not a good way. What FDA has done though is all the suppliers of antibiotics have to report sales to them, okay? And that's been going on every year, and that yearly report comes out. Now in the past, they lump all the livestock species together. Now, for the 2016 scorecard, they will actually attempt to split them out by species group, and understand there'll be some crossover, so I'm sure it won't be completely accurate, but that's probably the best that we have today. Is it perfect? No, because those are just sales. It's not actual usage. I think over time, each of the livestock species will figure out a way to be able to do some of that metric and monitoring on their own, preferably voluntarily, before something happens where it would get legislated on that they would have to keep those certain type of metrics.
Is volume of antibiotic a fair metric in your mind?
It's difficult, right? Because different drugs have different concentrations. So to say volume or even a grams per pound or anything like that, we're not really comparing apples to apples.
Earlier you were talking about the questions that you get the most from producers, and I guess a lot of them really have to do with the distribution of feed, don't they?
Yeah. You know, some of the common questions are, you know, how often do I have to VFD? One thing that we do very commonly is we pulse dose and maybe the same antibiotic several times through the finishing barn. Well, those are not written with refills on them, right? So there was a lot of debate and discussion between FDA and the different livestock species to say this is a very important tool to protect animal health and well-being. So what do we have to do in order to do it? And that's one of the common questions we get is, what about pulse dosing? And the answer that we've gotten from FDA, Center of Veterinary Medicine, is you can do it, you just have to have a VFD for each pulse. And then your veterinarian has to be able to document reasons why that those animals had to go back on that antibiotic. So that's a very common one that we get. You know, another one that we get commonly is, well, we have farms that may have contract growers, you know, where does that, who has to hold the final copy of that VFD? Is the owner of the pigs or is it the contractor? So there's questions like that, and generally the owner or whoever's listed on the client on the VFD is the one responsible for it, but you may have a copy out at each of the contractor's sites as well. So there's lots of questions like that, a lot about feed distribution, but we've had a really good working relationship with the feed distributors because they've been FDA inspected for much longer than what we have, so they've been really good partners. They're really kind of the ultimate gatekeeper, right? If they get a VFD in and it doesn't quite look right for them, I mean, they'll push back to the veterinarian, the producer, and say, well, we can't exactly do this. We have to make this modification. Is that okay in order to do so? You know, and then there's a whole separate set of regulations for people who do on-farm manufacturing of their own feed that they have to follow as well.
So it sounds like we're looking at maybe 50 shades of gray in some respects.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with going back to having that conversation. We've tried to do as good a job as we can of receiving those questions in up at Iowa State, and then we've got a VFD FAQ that as we get answers back from the FDA, we just keep adding those on and then push that out back through our website in order to try to make sure that we're getting that current information, those very commonly asked questions, to as many people as we can.